Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to finish the eighth parak of Bechorot, start the final parak, which obviously is going to be the ninth. Let's quickly run through the end of the eighth parak. We have one more sugya to do, and that is Yovel. The mitzvah of Yovel, 50th year comes around, so everything returns to its original owner. I sell you a piece of property, so it comes back to me in the year of Yovel. Now, the fact that we all know this, meaning let's just assume that Yovel is in force, which it isn't right now, but let's just assume the fact that we know this, so you realize right from the beginning that any sale is not really a sale. Meaning at the very origination of any sale of property in Eretz Yisrael, so you and I understand, we basically have a deadline. We have to Yovel. So sale probably is not the right word. We're probably going to use a better word, which is lease, meaning that all land in Eretz Yisrael is really leased from one to another. And what we're going to do is we're going to figure out how many years we have till Yovel. We'll prorate based on whatever the lease contract is up until that year. And that's how we're going to decide. And that's how we're going to determine how much I'm going to spend in order to get that land. So we say sale, but we don't really mean sale. We really mean something more in terms of a lease. When we get to Erechim, we'll discuss more of this in detail. Another just simple point, basic point. Yovel doesn't apply nowadays. Nowadays, we're in Eretz Yisrael. Even Shemitah Bezmanenu is probably the Rabbanan Ata Araisa. But Yovel for sure doesn't apply. The 50th year, the Jubilee year, is no longer enforced. The Gemara tells us you need the majority of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael in order for Yovel to be enforced. It's coming, meaning you're studying populations, which I'm not, but if you are, you realize that we're getting to that point now where that's going to happen. I recently heard Rav Schechter speak about it, but all right. But anyway, but it will have to go hand in hand, meaning Yovel and Shemitah have to coordinate together. Okay. There's another, we don't know what the Yovel year is, and there's another issue, which, another basic machlokas, which also is subject to another debate amongst the Rishonim, which is, do I count 50 and then I start the new cycle, or do I count 50 as the first year of the new cycle? Okay, that's also another machlokas, which we're not sure about, which also makes it more complicated, and I think more than ever, we need Mashiach to come in and settle a lot of these issues. Okay. Some things don't go back in Yovel. Now, first and foremost, before we even begin the Mishnah, you're right, you're already going to guess, number one, what's the first thing that's not going to go back in Yovel? Yerusha. Inheritance. Meaning, I mean, I guess there's a pragmatic issue of who's it going back to, but if we could just move past that point for just a moment, meaning it's Yerusha is different than any other type of transaction. It's Yerusha means that I basically take the place of the original owner. It's not a change of hands. Yerusha is not a change of hands. Yerusha is more that I just simply inherit. We have a different English word to describe the transaction. We understand intuitively that it's just a different type of transaction. It's a Yerusha. It's inheritance. It's not a sale. It's not a mecher. So first and foremost, you can already guess that most of what we're going to be discussing for the remainder of the eighth parak is just going to be basically what's incorporated in this Yerusha status and what's outside the Yerusha status. So now let's see the Mishnah inside. The Mishnah says, Ve'elushen chosen be'yovel. These are things that don't go back in Yovel. Let me go slower. Ha'bechorah. So number one, the double portion, meaning the oldest gets a double portion. That double portion is called Yerusha. Don't call it anything else. That's Yerusha. So therefore, that double portion that's received by the Bechorah, you get to Yovel, and the brothers say to him, look, that double portion that you enjoyed, that second portion that you enjoyed, like, let's put it back into the estate. Let's divvy it up. No, that's not correct. It does not go back in Yovel. Ha'yorosh is ishto, someone who inherits his wife, right? The inheritance of a husband of his wife's assets, debated. In fact, we're going to see the debate today in the Gemara, whether that works on the Daraisa level or that only works on a Darabana level. Let's assume it works on a Daraisa level, though again, it's up for debate. So then you understand. So when a wife dies and her husband inherits all of her estates, that's also Yerusha. Hamiyabem, well, yeah, but Phil, it's funny because you make the argument to stay in the family.
No, I'm saying stay in his family.
Right, that's correct. Her family, right. You know, would be more than happy if, you know, well, who's he, you know? Okay, fine. Correct. Yerusha Sishta. Number three, Amiyabim Issa Eshet Achiv. And if you do Yibam, we mentioned not that long ago, a day or two ago, that when you do the mitzvah of Yibam, you inherit your brother's estate. Part of the perks, if you will, of doing the mitzvah of Yibum is that now you mamash take over the place of your brother, and so therefore you inherit the estate. So these are all things that do not go back in the Yovel year. And one more thing, one kicker, hamatana, and gifts as well. Gifts don't go back in Yovel. So if you gift a piece of property to somebody in Eretz Yisrael, according to Rebbe Meir, right, Divrei Meir, according to Rebbe Meir, if you gift, so that doesn't go back in Yovel. The Chachamim omrim hamatana kemecher. Now the Chachamim say no, gifts are nothing more than a mecher, it's nothing more than a sale. In other words, I understand a gift, you don't get money in return, but still, categorically, right, how are we going to organize this information? The Chachamim say that matanas kemecher, much to discuss over here, and there's a third opinion in the mission, that's Rebbe Elazar. Elazar Omer, kulam chosim biyovel, Rebbe Elazar says everything goes back in Yovel. Now that everything of Rebbe Elazar is going on, which part of the Mishnah, so we'll discuss. Okay, that's a big statement. Kulam chosim biyovel. Finally, in the Mishnah of Yochanan Broka Omer, Hayorish Yisisha Yachzel of Nemishbacha V'inakim Mehemas Adamim. We have one final opinion in the Mishnah. Let's not call this a fourth opinion, but let's just call this like an addendum, and that's the following: that if you inherit your wife, so and Yovel, you return the properties of your wife back to her family, and you get refunded. U'menakim V'inakim Mehemas Adamim. Literally, that means that the money gets subtracted.
Money.
Right. So, the Gemara is going to make this point. We'll see this in the Gemara. That doesn't make any sense. Meaning, either you inherit your wife and it's yours, you don't inherit the wife, so it's not yours, or you want to say that you inherit your wife, but only rabbinically, so it's going to go back. And what are you getting money for? What are you getting refunded for? Okay. At this point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka doesn't make sense. As we look at it, just at its face value, so wait till the Gemara. The Gemara is going to discuss that as well.
When you return the land, it's only land that was from an original shvatim, right? It goes back to the sheva that it was.
It goes back to her. No, it goes back to her family. Yeah. Meaning, the Mishnah's point is that it goes back to her family.
They keep the shvatim, the land.
Yeah, but that was for one generation. They did right. That was at the end of Baba Basra. For one generation, they did, but.
After that, it didn't matter.
Kind of, right. It's possible for the Shvatim to intermingle. Now, let's start the Gemara. My time under a mayor, Mechru Hudam Rechman Aleh, had to be over. Rameyer says that Matana does not go back. So the Gemara explains that Mechru Hudam Rechman Aleh had to be over. Yeah, because the Torah says, sales go back in Yovel, matan of Yerusha lo, but not gifts and not Yerusha. V'hanim Yerusha, Yerusha de matan, matan b'chor. Lasis lo pishnayim matan karechmana. In fact, truth be told, is that even the double portion that's given to the oldest, Torah calls that a matana. Right now, that's a little bit strange, and it takes a little bit to process. Meaning, we refer to it always as Yerusha because that's the inheritance. But if you read the pasuk and the Gemara quotes the pasuk carefully, lases lo pishnayim. Lases are the same sharish, it's the same root as nesina, matana. So even though it's a double portion, and even though we call it a Yerusha, the Torah over here also refers to it as a gift. So Rameir's point is, what do you see over here? You see that gift and inheritance are basically categorically the same. Really no different, categorically. And so therefore, just like the Bechora portion, the double portion that goes to the Bechor does not go back in Yovel, neither do gifts as well. Hayarish Ishto, Yerusha Zabalda Araisa. Okay, Rameir holds that when a husband inherits his wife, that's a Din Daraisa. Right? Rashi quotes the Gemara Baba Basra, the Gemara over there, Darshans. Hamiyabin es Eshes Achiv. Bechor Kayu Rachmana. Also, we have the terminology Bechor. We spoke about this yesterday as well. That the Yavam is also referred to as a Bechor. Right? So, he has Bechor status. Doesn't have to be the Bechor. We talked about this yesterday. The Yavam doesn't have to be the Bechor, but he has Bechor status. And just like the Bechor gets an irrevocable Yerusha, so too the Yavam gets an irrevocable Yerusha, so to say. No, right, not to that extent, not to that degree. The Gemara made that suggestion, but the Gemara dismissed. Not to that degree, but to the degree in which he's now going to get, he's going to get whatever his brother had. V'chachamim omrim matana kemecher. Now we go to the Shita Chachamim, which is the position that we follow, meaning that gifts are revoked. Gifts revert back to the original owner in Yovel. My time at the Rabban and Tashuvah, the Rabbah says Amatana, because the Pasuk says in Parshas Bahar that Isha Achuzaso Tashuvu, everything returns back to its original owner. The word Tashuvu, somewhat extra, right? Rashi says the whole Pasuk is extra. Rashi says, Isha Achuzaso Krayuserahu, Dakvar Namar, Vishaftim Isha Achuzaso, Vihilkach Larabbah says Amatana. The whole Pasuk is really extra. We already know everything's returning back in the Yovel year, so we have this extra Pasuk. Matana goes back as well.
And that's any gift you give
someone? Well, really, we're talking right now about property. We're talking about Yova, we talk property.
Oh, right, property. So if I give you a field.
So if you gift me a piece of property, so it goes back to you in Yova.
So if I do it a few days before Yova, you don't think that's such a great guy.
You're right. Right, that's the honey cooler Yerushas Nenu. Now, how do you understand this? So it's all really a function of Yerusha, meaning. Because look, the Chachamim are going to say like this. The only thing that doesn't return in the Yovel year is Yerusha. That's it. And all these cases in the Mishnah are categorically Yerusha. First, the Bechor portion, Yerusha. The Gemara uses the methodology of Hekesh, meaning that the Torah connects the second portion that it receives with the first portion that it receives. The first portion receives is for sure Yerusha, so is that second portion as well. It's called a Hekesh. And we say the same thing about everything else in the Mishnah. When I say everything else, I mean only Yerusha Sishto and Miyabe Mesesha Sachiv. And so therefore, what does that leave us with? Matana. Matana is not a Yerusha. Matana is therefore return. The third opinion of the Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar Omer Kulim Chosim B'Yovel Savar L'Karabban and Darmi Tashuvah L'Rabbas Samatana. Okay, as far as Rabbi Lazar is concerned, Rabbi Lazar fundamentally agrees with the Chachamim. Gifts go back in Yovel. V'hani Kulim Matana Ninhu. Now, what about everything else mentioned in the Mishnah? Yeah, they also all go back. Why? So let's take this one by one. Number one, Bechor. L'Aseis L'Pishnai Matana Karechmana. So number one says Rabbi Lazar, the Bechor. Because that second portion that he receives, for whatever reason, which the Gemara doesn't explain, he doesn't subscribe to Hekesh. He doesn't believe, not in general, I'm saying in this particular case, for whatever reason, he doesn't subscribe to the Hekesh. Therefore, he looks at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Laseis lo pishnayim. That second portion that he receives, it's not like the first portion. The first portion that he received was Yerusha. What's that second portion he received? A gift. And therefore, it goes back in Yovel. Rav Elazar disagrees with what we've been saying up until now. Right? According to Rav Meir, according to the Chachamim, a husband inherits his wife on a Doraisa level. According to Rav Elazar, it's only Midrabbanan. And therefore, it goes back in Yovel. Which means then that it's only a rabbinic institution that a husband inherits his wife. And come Yovel, the rabbi said, okay, enough. Meaning it's going to go back to her ancestral, it's going to go back to her family. Now, someone who performs Yibum, he inherits it, but categorically, how does he inherit it? Like a Bechor. And according to Rav Elazar, what's a Bechor's Pishnayim? That's a Matana. Therefore, the Yavam's property that he inherits from his brother is going to be returned in Yovel, because categorically it's like Bechor, which categorically is like Matana. Okay, Adkan. So the Gemara took us now through the three opinions of the Mishnah. I told you that fourth opinion is really an addendum. We'll come back to that a little bit later on. And so therefore, opinions 1, 2, and 3, according to Rav Meir, it all stays by you. You get to keep everything except for Mecher, meaning you even get to keep a Matana. According to the Chachamim, no. A Matana is like a Mecher, just like a Mecher returns, a sale returns in the Yovel, so too does a Matana. And according to Rabbi Lazar, everything except for Yerusha, meaning even the Pishtaim of the Bechor, even the Yavam's inheritance, even a husband's inheritance of his wife, it all goes back in Yovel. Okay, three opinions. As you would guess, we go like number two. We go like the Chachamim.
Well, the Yavam, it says he returns to the brother. To who does it
return? So
he doesn't have any children.
Right. So I guess it goes back to the estate. Meaning amongst the brothers, amongst all the brothers.
To any further relatives.
That's what I would assume. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan. We've seen this Gemara a number of times throughout Shas. Here, I guess we would say it's the prime location because it's really the topic of discussion. Okay. You have an estate. The estate now is going to be divided by the brothers. How do you view that division of the estate? Now, right, if the father was good, he would actually outline, you get this, you get this, you get this. But if the father doesn't do this, how do you view that division of the estate? Probably with a couple of heated arguments. But aside from that, how is it done? So Rav Yochanan says, we call it lekuchos. Meaning, we don't know. I don't know which shares I'm getting. You don't know which shares you're getting. So basically what we're going to be doing now is we're going to be bartering one to another. I'll give to you, you give to me. And we're bartering. We're going to be bartering with one another. When all said and done, when the day's over, the portion that I received was really a transaction. It wasn't an inheritance. We're going to call it now a transaction. And now, according to Rav Yochanan, when Yovel comes around, so how did I get that property? Not via Yerusha, but via a transaction. And so therefore everything returns. Now this gets complicated. Right. Perfect. Right on. This is now going to get complicated because essentially now what's going to happen is, okay, so it returns to what? It returns to the estate. So now it goes back to the estate. So there's a big discussion, right? I saw a number of people talk about it. There's a big discussion. Is it get redistributed same? Or now at Yovel, do we get to reshuffle the deck? Okay. Subject to a debate. Rashi. He quotes a lot of people, right? So, right, Machzir and Zelazer, Rashi says, V'choz and V'cholkin. Sounds like Rashi, a short Rashi. But sounds like from Rashi that we start all over again. We do a total new division, a total new chalukah, and everything gets redivided. It is a complicated system, meaning according to Rashi, if I'm reading Rashi accurately, really turns into a big mess. Comes Yovel, that means even brothers who inherited their estates are going to have to redivide.
Can they decide that, you know what, since we're taking back the same, I mean, can we just keep it? We're keeping the same? Or they have to do something, they have to put it back in the pot and then take it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly right.
That's what I'm saying. If they know they're going to take back the same portion, do they have to do something? Or just like in advance?
I don't, right.
Yovel comes,
correct. I'm unsure. I'm unsure. Most of Rav Oshia ve'elu she'ein chozer. Now the Gemara. I'm sorry, the Gemara doesn't make this point over here. Let me just make it very quickly. It's important, and that is the following. Why? Why do we view this as a transaction? Why don't we view this as a simple Yerusha? Well, meaning, what happened? Dad died. This is the estate. We're dividing the estate. Why aren't we looking at this as a Yerusha? Why do we look at this as a transaction? And so the Gemara elsewhere, I thought it was the Gemara here, no. The Gemara elsewhere says it's contingent on the issue of Brera. Meaning, the concept of Brera is that if there was a determination that needed to be made, and the determination was made at a later point in time, can I now say retroactively, this was true all the way from the point that we needed clarification? So this is the issue of Brera, right? Do we hold a Brera? Major machlokas throughout the Gemara. Right, machlokas amongst the Tanaim, machlokas amongst the Amoraim, major machlokas. So if you're saying that when the estate comes now to the brothers, and the brothers are now dividing the estate, and we view it as a transaction, essentially you are not a believer in Brera. You don't subscribe to Brera. Because essentially now what you're saying is, the part that I received, it's not huvrar hadavar lemafreya. It's not retroactively determined that that's the portion that I was entitled to from the moment that dad died, but rather, this is it now. Meaning the division took place right now, and so therefore you're looking more at a transaction than you are at an actual Yerusha. Okay, let's go continue in the Gemara. Moshe Rav Oshia ve'elu she'en chozer miyovel abechora. So the Gemara says, wait a second, can I ask you a simple question? What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah Bechora, the final Mishnah of the 8th parak of Bechora, says that one of the things that don't go back in Yovel is the double portion of the Bechora. Right? Simple question. It's such a simple question. So if that's true, none of the Yerusha should return back in the Yovel year. Right. So Amalei Rav Elazar, man ain't my in chosen levatala. So Rav Elazar says, oh, you misunderstood the Mishnah. Wow, that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means when it says ein chozrin, it means that the Bechor doesn't lose his right to the Pishnayim. He's always entitled to the Pishnayim. Meaning, here's what's going to happen. We get to Yovel, we're going to basically now say, look, it's a transaction. It all goes back to the estate. And now the Bechor still is entitled to Pishnayim. Right? It does sound, the way I'm explaining the Gemara now, it does sound like it's a total redistribution. It does sound that way. Okay, so ein chozrin levatala. So maske flar Rav Sheshes Michal demanda amr chozrin levatala. Chozrin levatala kamar. So if you're of the opinion that it's chozer, meaning that the double portion of the kohen does in fact go back, which is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah. So it means chozrin levatala. It means that the Kohen loses his double portion. The Bechor. Right, so Kari Rav Chama, Aleha de Rav Sheshes, Tova Chachma im Nachala. You know, what would be good, Chachma im Nachala. Now, literally, the Pasuk in Kohelis means wisdom together with inheritance. But over here, what the Gemara's understanding is that it's good to know a bunch of Brisas and Mishnayos, right? And then it's also good to have a little bit of sense, right? And like how to understand it and how to think about it. And not just simply to know Mishnah and Braises, which obviously you need to know, that's the basic. But on top of that, Chachma as well. Correct. Meaning that when it says Choser, it means Choser Levatala. He loses it, the Kohen loses, sorry, I keep saying Kohen. Bechor loses his double portion. And finally, last point of the Mishnah. Rav Yochan ben Broka Omer Yorosh Yisisho Yorosh Yisisho Yachzir Livnei Mishpacha V'inakim Mehem Asadamim. Okay, that last part of the Mishnah, it's an opinion of Rav Yochan ben Broka. When you get to the Yovel year, you got to take your wife's inheritance. And in other words, Rachman Litzlan, your wife dies, you inherit your wife. You got to take it and return it back to her family. And then you get refunded. And the Gemara throws his hands up in the air. My kasavar. Like, what's going on over here? E kasavar, Yerusha Sabal Daraisa, my yachsil of Nemesh Bacha. Look, if you take the position that you inherit your wife and that works on a Daraisa level, so that's Yerusha. That's not going back to her family, it's staying with you. E kasavar, Yerusha Sabal Darabban and Dami, my avidatayu. And if Yerusha Habal is only a din Darabbanan, so that means that when we get to Yovel, it goes back to her family. And you shouldn't get refunded. What are you getting refunded for? You didn't pay for that land. La'olam kasav Yerusha Sabal Daraisa. So the Gemara said just like this. Now, really, Rav Yochanan ben Broka holds that Yerusha Sabal is Daraisa, like Rav Meir of our Mishnah, like the Chachamim of our Mishnah. V'hachem ma'iskinen kegon sharishtuhu ishto beisakvaros. And the Gemara is interesting scenario. And what did you inherit from your wife? You inherited from your wife burial plot. Meaning, part of what she owned, however it got to her, part of what she owned was her family burial plot. And now through Yerusha, in other words, the wife dies, and now Yerusha Tabal's Daraisa, so now what did the husband inherit? All of her estate, including her family's burial plot. Now that's mortifying. It's embarrassing. Because it was her family plot, and all of her family members were, you know, looking to bury their family in it, and now you're the owner? It's bizarre. So what Rav Yochanan ben Broka says is, here, basically, the Chachamim gave her family the right to buy it back. Meaning, really, if you just operate with a Daraisa level, it's the husband's. It's the husband's property. I know it's a burial site, but it's the husband's. The Chachamim said, this is embarrassing. I mean, the Gemara almost uses that word. It's Begam Mishpacha. It's embarrassing now that her family is going to lose the burial plot. So perhaps she should have.
She owned the whole burial plot.
The burial plot, for whatever reason, was in her name.
Right.
Okay. So, Ishto Beis HaKvaros, Mishum Pekam Mishbach, Amar Rabbanan, Lishko Demei, Vilehader. So what the Chachamim allowed her family to do is basically pay and pay and buy back the burial plot. We learned this in a brace as well. And the halacha is that if a person sells either the burial plot or a path to the burial plot or the ma'amad or the beis hespei, these are different places where you eulogize over them. So the family members can, against the buyer's will, bury their family in that burial plot. Meaning, even though you can sell the land, but you can't sell the rights, right, of the burial plot. So over here, similar story, where her family now can force back a buyback of the ancestral burial plot. And then the Gemara says, "Umay yinakalem an adamim." Fine, that's Rav Yochanan ben Broka. And what does it mean, "yinakalem an adamim"? To make kever ishto. It means, so what is he getting refunded for? Meaning, I'm saying, what's being deducted from the sale? So his wife's graves. Because part of the Tanai Ksuva, part of the contract of the Ksuva, is that a husband has to bury his wife. It's part of the responsibility of a husband to his wife that he has to bury her. And so therefore, that's something that he can't let them pay. He has to pay for that. Hadron Alach Yesh Bechor, end of the 8th parak.
Right. Now he sold it back to the family.
So is it going to go back?
Does it go back to him?
It's an interesting point. Huh? It's a very interesting point.
They should listen
to
him.
Right.
Well,
okay. Okay. We start now the 9th parak of Becholros. And this is like a bonus round over here. Okay, we finished. We're done with Becholros. I mean, try to convince you that. Yeah, see him. We have one coming up in the end of January. But and even though I'm insisting that we finish at the end of Becholros, but we have about 9 more blot to go, 8 more blot to go of Becholros. It takes us all the way to Samach Aleph, 61, and we're only on 53. Okay, so what happened? So we get, it's a bonus round. So we get now treated to the halachas of Maisa Behema. Now we see Masechtas do this often, where you have and I don't mean this with any irreverence, you have a little mitzvah. Little mitzvah, I mean, just not a lot of halachas that revolve around this mitzvah. You can't make an entire Masechtas out of this mitzvah, so therefore it's incorporated and included in other Masechtas. Right? Not that long ago we learned Shavuos, and the first two parakim of Shavuos dealt with walking into the Beis HaMikdash while being Tameh, eating carbon while being Tameh, meaning things that really are not Shavuos related, but, you know, just kind of, it was placed over there. Now, Rav Yehuda Nasi, obviously, when he wrote the Mishnayos, he was very, very deliberate. He was super organized, as is clear, as we go through the Mishnayos. So there's got to be method to madness. So why did Maisa Behema get included over here? Huh? Yeah, so look at the top tosis on the page. Top tosis on the page deals with this issue. B'chol makom ragel aska b'chor u'maiser u'pesach sheshavim b'matnoseihem. So you go back to Kachim, remember? I mean, we are learning Kachim, Seder Kachim. But you remember, b'chor, maiser, and pesach, it rolls off the tongue, especially if you say your kabbonis every morning. Okay, I'm not zoche, but if you say your kabbonis every morning, so you do the 5th parak of Zvachim, and you know, B'chor Maaser Pesach, it just kind of rolls off the tongue. So, and why? Because in terms of matanos, when you sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, they are all sprinkled in the same manner. It's one zrika onto the Mizbeach, and so therefore they are categorically the same. So, what else should now go into our Masechta? Pesach. So, yeah, so Tosso says, it won't fit. Lahachitana, Umaiser aga b'chor, upesach de nefishim milei tanim b'psachim. Excuse me. So as far as Pesach is concerned, Pesach is too much. Pesach is too big. 10 parakim of Pesach or what we call psachim. Yeah.
The carbon of Pesach is added on there because it's psachim.
Right. Right. The correct. The only thing is there's five prakim. Of the 10 prakim of Pesachim, five of them deal with the carbon Pesach. So it's a lot. It's just a lot. It's not going to fit here. But Maisa Behema will. Okay? And Maisa Behema, we've spoken about this in many different contexts throughout Shas. Oh, look at that. Right time. Okay, throughout Shas. Here we go now, discussing it and as an entire parak. It's a very simple mitzvah. It doesn't require much much in terms of mathematical knowledge. Here's what you do. All your animals that are born over the course of this year, you put them in a pen, you make a little opening in the door, and you let them walk out, and you start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. I could do it in other languages as well, but right now I'll just impress you with my English. So, and then when you get to the 10th animal, so you mark the 10th animal, you put a red mark on the 10th animal, and now that is Maisa Behema. And now what? It has Kedusha. It's a carbon. It has status of a carbon. Now, you cannot predetermine which one's going to be the 10th animal. There's an element of randomness, and it's almost like a gamble in terms of which animal is going to be the 10th animal. Could be that animal is a Baal Mum. Okay, that we'll talk about later on in the Perek. Now that it has Kedusha, so what do? You take it up to Yerushalayim, and you bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. You offer it as a carbon. We just learned that its blood is sprinkled the same way that a carbon Pesach is, and the same way that a Bechor is. And then what? The owner of the animal gets to eat it as a carbon shlamim.
What if he has a hundred of them?
Huh?
What if he has a hundred of them?
What if you...
if you have 100 of them. I mean, like...
Oh, so okay. So you take them all up. Now, I always assumed. I want you to know, in preparing for today's daf, I always assumed that the owner gets to eat it. That's yeah. I know it's machlokas, but I didn't know that. In other words, before today, I always just simply assumed that it's the owner's. That's a simple pshat. It's really most follow that. I mean, you look at any of your main Rishonim, that's basically how it goes. There is a thought amongst some Rishonim, right? I don't have a chapter verse over here, but some Rishonim say that actually it's given to the Kohen as part of Matnas Kahuna. I gotta look more into this. I don't know what
the Mishnah itself says that it's eaten by the owner. The Mishnah, chapter 5 of.
Zvachim, of right, it's Zvachim. Yeah.
It says that it's eaten by the owner.
Nechalabalim.
Oh yeah, and it says that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You're right. I don't know where that comes from. I need to look more into it. But anyway, it's out there. You know, it's as a thought. If anyone ever says, you know, Maisa Behema given to a Kohen, it's not outlandish. It's not mainstream, but it's not outlandish. Okay, mainstream. But let's deal with mainstream. Okay, because.
What are they doing these days?
The Gemara's going to ask that question. Okay.
When you separate them, does he have to? Can he put them back into the flock because they're marking on which one they are, or does he have to keep?
No, that's it. They're all they're out.
Saying, he has to keep them separate from the rest of the
flock. Yeah, I mean they have kedusha now.
I understand that, but I'm saying he marked them, right? So he knows which one they are.
Right. Okay.
But he still has to keep them separate after. Right.
Okay. We'll get to it. Okay. Let's start the Mishnah. Ma'aser behema nog ba'aretz v'chus aretz b'fnei abayis v'shlo b'fnei abayis v'chulin v'lom b'mukdashin. Okay, so you should be familiar with this type of Mishnah structure, right? This is chulin. We're like back in chulin right now, right? Prakim like 5 through 12 with a couple of exceptions. But, right, this is exactly the format of the Mishnah. Ma'aser behema applies in Israel and outside of Israel. It applies when there was a Beis HaMikdash. And when there is no Beis HaMikdash. And it applies to Chulin, but it doesn't apply to Hekdesh. Meaning, if you have a carbon, that's not part of the count. In other words, the count is only for animals which are Chulin. V'noeg bebakar v'tzon, ve'ein mit asrim mizeh al zeh. Now, the mitzvah applies to both large animals and to small animals. Bakar, code for large animals. Tzon, code for small animal. Baksavim uva'izim. Sorry. The ein mitzas from mizeh al zeh. I missed the point of the Mishnah. You can't take off maaser from one on the other, meaning you have to segregate the bakar from the tzon. Bakar is to be counted separately. Tzon is to be counted separately. and they cannot be intermingled, they cannot be intermixed, and you cannot count them together. Now, as far as sheep and goat are concerned, yeah, they can be lumped together. Sheep, goat, it's all the same. So, kvasim vayizim etasim izalzeh, b'chadosh uv'yasham, v'enam etasim izalzeh. Now, what if you have animals around for a long time, and they've never been counted before? They also need to be counted. But, says the Mishnah, enam etasim izalzeh, you got to keep your animals of different years separate. Meaning an animal that was born last year cannot be combined with an animal that's born this year. In terms of counting, in terms of accounting, they must be kept separate.
How could it be from last year? Last year you should have done it last year.
Should have. Absolutely correct. You didn't. You missed last year. Shehayah bedinam, right? It's like you didn't pay your taxes last year. Don't worry. They
no.
Yeah, I know. Huh? Right, correct. That's also right. They also have to be kept fiscally separate from one another. Absolutely correct. So mitasum izel zeh shaya bedin. Oma imachadosh vayashan shena klaim zeh bezeh. Eina mitasum izel al zeh. Now, the Mishnah tells us you could have constructed an argument, a great argument. And you could have said like this. Look, last year's animal and this year's animals. Are they really different from one another? No. No, they're not different from one another. In fact, if I mate the two together, did I violate the Isser of Kalayim? No. It's a two-year-old sheep and a one-year-old sheep. There's no Kalayim by that. And meanwhile, the Torah says that for the mitzvah of Maisa Behema, you got to segregate. They can't be kept together. So now, if that's true, now take that same argument and apply it now to sheep and goat. Is there an Isser of Kalayim for sheep and goat? You bet there is. In other words, you can't mate a sheep and a goat together. That's the Isser of Kalayim. Kvasavi izim shehein kalayim zebizeh, eino din shalo yeh metasim izel zeh. So if they need to be separate for the Isser of Kalayim, can't you make an argument that they need to be separate also for the mitzvah of Maisa Behema? Meaning we have such a kavachomer that we could make. Tamalam rav itzon, mashma kol tzon echad. So that's why the Torah uses the word sown. Sown is a global term. It's a generic term. It basically means small animal, sheep and goat. So in other words, Mishnah is basically saying, you could have had a kal v'chomer. The pasuk negates the kal v'chomer. Sorry. Lema masis in the local Rabbi Akiva, the Tanya Rabbi Akiva, Omer Yachol Yala Adam Maser Behema Mechutz Ha'aretz Vayakri Venu, Tamalam Aveh Veisem Shem Olosem Veziv Chayem Ves Masro Sechem. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, I read that quickly, but basically, Rabbi Akiva says, you know what Maaser Behema is? Categorically, it's Maaser Dagan. It's the same. Therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, do we have a mitzvah to take off Maaser for all the fruit and vegetables that we grow here in South Florida? No. What? Maaser Dagan. Right, Maaser Dagan. Right? No. Maaser Dagan just simply means grain. Anything from grain. No, meaning Maaser Dagan is exempt from Trumas and Maaser outside of Eretz. It's an agricultural mitzvah, applicable only to Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Akiva says, Maaser Behema, same story. Same story. Why? He goes back to the Pasuk. I'll just reread the Pasuk. Olo sehem v'zivchehem ve'es ma'asro sechem. Your ma'asrot, plural. You can't do that in English, but you understand. Meaning ma'asrot, doubled. So the Torah is referring to two types of ma'aser. One's ma'aser dagan, and the other's ma'aser behemer. Okay, good. Comes out that according to Rabbi Akiva, the mitzvah of ma'aser behemer is only in Israel, not outside of Israel. Okay? And that means our Mishnah does not accord with Rabbi Akiva. Wouldn't be the end of the world, but you know how the Gemara likes it. The Gemara likes to try to incorporate as many opinions into the Mishnah as possible. Afilu tem Rabbi Akiva, kanli kariv, kanli kadesh. So the Gemara says, no. Our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva. Even though Rabbi Akiva says that animals outside of Eretz Yisrael are not going to be Maaser Behema, that only means you can't offer them on the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning animals raised outside of Eretz Yisrael cannot be offered in the Beis HaMikdash. But they'll have Kedusha, they'll have sanctity. Dekanami Dekanasiv Le Tamuda Vevesem Shama Shmamina. Yeah. In fact, you go back to the Pasuk that we just read, Vehevesem Shama, you bring there. What does it mean, Vehevesem Shama, you bring there? Meaning that if you have an animal that was born and raised in Israel, then you bring that animal to the Beis HaMikdash. But if it was born outside of Israel, you don't bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. But it has Kedusha. Now, the Gemara is going to ask the next question, which is obvious. Well, if it has Kedusha and I don't bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, now what? You're stuck, right? So, I hachi me'achi she'inu krav amai kadosh. If it's not being offered as a karban, so why invest it with Kedusha? Why does it have Kedusha? Lenecha b'mum alabalim. The owner's going to have to wait until it develops a blemish, and then it's eaten by its owner with a blemish. This fits in, maybe, perhaps, with the Sefer Chinuch. I should do this more often. Every time we get to a new mitzvah, so the Sefer Chinuch gives a reason behind the mitzvah, right? Just know in general, it's very enjoyable. And the Sefer Chinuch makes the following suggestion. What's behind Maisa Behema? Interesting, by the way. In other words, if I would try to give me a rationale, give me a reason. Why is there such a mitzvah as Maisa Behema? So again, you get on to the bigger issue of, you know, Tamei HaMitzvah. Should we look for Tamei HaMitzvah? But the Sefer Chinuch doesn't have a problem with it. He always finds Tamei HaMitzvah. He always finds reasons behind the mitzvah.
Except for one.
Huh?
Except for one.
Well, right.
For one.
You can guess.
Wild
guess. Paraduma. Okay. The Sefer Chinuch says, you know what the whole purpose of Maisa Behema is? It's an excuse for you to go to Yerushalayim. That's it. The velo right al kain sibei betzvunam v'nasan lahem makom sheid. Sorry, it'll come back. Maybe not today, but it'll come back. Al kain sibei betzvunam v'nasan lahem makom sheidu kol hakol divrei sorasol kol panim. Meaning, it's incumbent upon every Jew to know Torah. Right. Remember, the Sefer Chinuch was a work of Musar from a father to a son. So, you know, you hear a lot of Musar. It's nice. Now, generally speaking, where do you live? You live where your money is. Meaning, wherever you may be able to make a living. So, in other words, your money establishes your living place. And basically what happens annually, because of this mitzvah of Maaser Behema, is now you're forced. I understand there's pilgrimage, there's Shalosh Regalim, but another excuse, another reason why now you have to go to Yerushalayim. V'hi Yerushalayim sheshama Sanhedrin yodei das mevinei mada. And what are you going to find in Yerushalayim? You're going to find the Sanhedrin. V'kamo keinala l'sham maser t'vuasena ba'arba shnei hashmita. Kamo sheyadu shemaiser sheni ne'achal sham. Another reason why they forced you to go to Yerushalayim, maiser sheni. Same story. 4 to 7 years of the Shemitah cycle. Same story. Right? Basically, it's an excuse to get you to Yerushalayim. And what are you going to do when you're in Yerushalayim? You're going to learn Torah. Of course.
Spend money and
you're right. So all those who go to Eretz Yisrael for Sukkot, for Pesach, you're doing good. Specifically Yerushalayim. Specifically to learn Torah. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's I know that's probably where I would end up. So that's it. Okay. Why do I bring that up now? Because that's exactly what the Gemara says. Meaning vehevesim shama. I mean, you know, I'm not sure if this is what motivated the Chinuch to say it, but it's really the pasuk. The pasuk says vehevesim shama. Meaning when you have an animal in Eretz Yisrael, you bring it up to Yerushalayim. If you have it outside of Eretz Yisrael, so, you know, in other words, it has Kedusha, but that's it. You don't have to, there you're not expected to bring it to Yerushalayim. Okay. Bifnei Abayis v'shalom Bifnei Abayis. Just a couple more minutes, a little bit more to go. So, Ihachi afilo hayid nanami. Okay, so now, Hedy, the Gemara is going to ask basically your question. What's happening now? Nowadays, what happened to Maaser Behema? What happened to the mitzvah of Maisa Behema? Okay? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of suggestions. Kid Ravuna Dam Ravuna Gzera Mishum Yasam. So Ravuna says it's a Gzera. Gzera because of Yasam. Now we're going to learn later on that that an animal that does not have a parent is exempt from the mitzvah of Maisa Behema. Okay? It's coming up. Get to it a couple days from now. So therefore, we're concerned that what may end up happening is that one of the animals that was designated for your Maisa Behema is a Yasom, who actually has an exemption, and so therefore, we just simply obviated the whole mitzvah.
What does it mean that it doesn't have a
parent? Meaning its mother died. Right. Now, the Gemara says, Ihachim ikari nami lo. So the Gemara says, that's it's strange. Meaning, after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, so the reason why we're not going to legislate, we're not legislating anything, it's a mitzvah in the Torah, but the reason why we're not enforcing the mitzvah of Maisa Behema is because of the Gzer of Yasam. What changed between before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and after? If you're ready to make such a gzera, shouldn't have such a gzera existed when there was a Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara says, well, when during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you made an announcement. Meaning, if there was an animal that lost a parent, so you'd make a simple hachraza, an announcement that would say that its parent died, and that would avoid the problem. So the Gemara says, hachinami, asher b'hachraza. Okay, so we'll do that now without the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, I'm just not hearing it. That cannot be the reason why we no longer subscribe to this mitzvah of Maisa Behema. So the Gemara says, okay, let's try it this way. Elam Rabba Mishum Tekala. So Rabba says the issue is Tekala, meaning, look at Rashi, Ein lanu amal hakriv v'tzarech lishua ashi umam v'asi beli de Tekala, digizav avoda u'shochtem b'lomom. Meaning, nowadays we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So now what? Every time you count Maisa Behema, every time now you take out the 10th animal, the only thing you need to do now is just wait. And it's also begiza vavoda, you can't shear it, you can't work it. And you can't eat it until it develops a blemish. And now you're basically begging for an issue to come up. So therefore, umenatema dechayshinan letakala, and we know that this is true, that we're worried, because ein makdishim, ein marichim, ein machrim, ein mizman hazeh, you cannot consecrate something, you cannot do erich nowadays, you can't be machrim a field. You get to Erechim, we'll learn all these terms. We'll get more familiar with all these terms. Bisman is then nowadays without a Beis HaMikdash, Vim Hikdash, Ve'erech, Ve'echrim, Behema, Te'aker, Peres, Ksuz, Ve'kelem, Yerkavu, Maos, Ve'klimatachos, Yolech, Liam, HaMelech. And if you do it nowadays, you have to destroy it. Because if you leave it around, someone's going to get benefit from it. Somebody will be Mo'al Behekdash. So basically, you must destroy it. Ve'ezer, He, Ikor, Noel, Del, Be'fanav, Ve'himesa, Me'alaha. As far as the animal, destruction of the animal, you actually have to let the animal die if you're makdish an animal bizman azeh. Okay. So the reason why Maisa Behema is obviated nowadays is simply because if it's not, you're going to have consecrated animals walking around and we don't know what to do with them. E hachi.
Essentially, we have a
shovah
pasa, right?
Well, just wait one second. Yeah.
In the store pasa.
Correct. Ihachi bechor nami lo likdash. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so then what about bechor? What's the bechor? B'didan tal yamil so berechem kadosh. The Gemara says, wait a second, I don't even understand your question. Bechor, you didn't have options by a bechor. You didn't do anything by bechor, right? It happens automatically. So the Gemara's response to that is, no, what I'm suggesting is, hachi kamar. Why don't we do what we suggested earlier in the Masechta? Meaning as a institution, why don't we have everybody sell part of an animal? Remember we had a debate how much of the animal you need to sell, but you also remember that we concluded very conclusively that you only need to sell a small fraction of the animal, even if it's just an ear of the animal, that's enough. And so if a non-Jew as a part owner, shareholder of an animal, it is exempt. Its children will be exempt from the mitzvah of bechor. The lo likdish me ikara. Top of the next amud. So asher kader Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yehuda, mutar lolam lahatamom bebechor kodem shiyasa lavir olam. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you don't have to do that. We're not gonna systemize. We're not gonna categorically say everyone needs to do that Because you know, there's another way to get around Bechor. And that is place a blemish on the animal before it comes outside. Meaning, the farmer will put his hand into the womb of the mother and place a blemish in the animal. You're allowed to do that before it comes out. So, mutal olam she'atamum Bechor kodesh she'atal avir olam. Hachanam yashad deshadi be'mum amikara. So the Gemara says, can't you do that by the Maisa Behema? Can't you just simply put a blemish on the animal before count? Now you're allowed to do that. Why? Because you don't know which one's going to come out. So Kodesh Yatzal Avi Olam Hachanami Asher Deshadi Beimom Mikar Miyad Dahai Nafik. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you don't know which one's coming out. V'chitema Demapikle Bereish Asara. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you'll put the blemished animal as number 10. Lo Yivakar Bein Tov L'Ra. You can't do that. It has to be indiscriminate. So Amar Rachman V'chitema Asher Deshadi Beimom Bekule Adre. And now we're going to get to the bizarre scenario of why don't you put a blemish on the entire flock? So Mehera Yibana Beis Hamikdash Vina Mehema LaKrev Avalek, as the Gemara says, implausible, not practical, because now what? Now we have, if this is institutionalized, you're going to have herds and herds of animals that are blemished, and then tomorrow, or I should say better, today, the Beis Hamikdash will be built. And we don't have an animal. Well, if we institutionalize that by Bechor, aren't you worried? So the Gemara says, no. Because if I institutionalize the blemishing of Bechor, that's just a Bechor. Yeah. So Hachanami, Efshar B'Lekuchen. The Gemara says, yeah, but you know there's ways of getting around Maisa Behema. You know a purchased animal is exempt from Maisa Behema. Again, we'll see that later on. The Gemara says, you're right, but still, if you start institutionalizing, you know what? We're legislating. Everyone puts a blemish on all your animals. And yes, it's true, the purchased animals are exempt. But you have a lot of animals that are now going to be blemished. Couple that with the fact that it's just a small blemish that's going to disqualify the animal. You know what? We just can't have it that way. Because if we institutionalize, you're going to have so many blemished animals. And today, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, later this afternoon, it's almost Shabbos in Israel, so it's got to happen.
Not
today. So you're right. So we can't do that. We cannot legislate that people should blemish their animals. Okay. We'll stop over here tomorrow.